and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am Nate Bucati, donning my Bleed Sporting Blue Blood Drive shirt. Now, look, this is an old one. I did not make it to the Blood Drive on Monday, but I'm wearing this in honor of those of you that did. Look at Carter Augustine with the needle marks. That is not because he's got a problem, ladies and gentlemen. That's because he's out helping people, saving lives. You, Carter Augustine, are a superhero because you literally saved someone's life by doing that at the Sporting Kansas City Blood Drive on Monday. It's always important, but right now during the crisis and pandemic that we're in, it's even more so. So you and I know the entire staff at Sporting Kansas City filled up slots right away, and everybody else that went to the Blood Drive on Monday. Attaboy, how was it, man?
It was good. It was well run. Shout out to everyone, the Community Blood Center, and everyone out there that was working it. Pretty well run in terms of, like, you signed up for a time and they have you all spaced out. And I was talking to a couple of gals that were running, and they're saying, man, a lot of times in the past it's a nut house, but this is actually kind of nice. We might do this moving forward with these type of events. It ran so smoothly. So I was really pleased with the turnout. So like you said, a lot of sporting staff was there, which was awesome, but a lot of fans and general public as well. So like you said, they were saying because the elective surgeries are coming back that they're already short on blood, and that's going to make it even more of a perilous situation. So yeah, if you can, there are extended hours at most of the blood banks around the city, so you can make an appointment and go in and really help out. And Kurt Austin from our PR staff actually texted me. He said, it's funny how I can always find the camera, because evidently I was in the background for a 41 action news piece that they did on the thing yesterday. So he was giving me a little crap for that.
Hey, that's a skill. Chase Daniel, your Missouri Tiger guy, was one of the greatest in NFL history at knowing where the camera was and just being somewhere off the shoulder of the guy on camera. And what's your blood type, Carter?
I can't remember, and I told them that, so they're gonna send me that in a couple weeks. And I my mom, and she didn't remember, so I was like, thanks, mom.
Mine's easy to remember. I didn't find out till I gave blood for the first time a few years ago at this one, actually. But it's easy to remember because it's just like my personality. Be positive.
There you go.
I've been like deferred from giving blood a couple of times, so I have to like kind of get an initial test to see if I can give blood. I'd like to go do it if I'm able to, but I'm like the universal blood type.
The
all giving source. I definitely want to look into that, because I interviewed Jillian Sakovitz, the host and reporter with Atlanta United, and she had COVID and recently gave, you donate your plasma to help people who are battling the disease have the antibodies to fight it off. So really cool conversation with her, but yeah, I mean, anything that anyone can do to help right now, whether it's COVID related or just, you know, like you said, Carter, with the elective surgeries and having a shortage of blood is really important.
Yeah, Jillian's been pretty active on social media, telling her story. She lives in New York City, right? And she's as you said, the sideline reporter for Atlanta United. And I've talked to one of the ER docs in Kansas City that said that they're using some of those plasma treatments here in Kansas City now as well, and they've had some pretty good initial results. A lot of this stuff is still kind of experimental, but they feel like it's shown some real positive outcomes. What was her story like when you talked to her?
Yeah, so I mean, first off, she got diagnosed about mid-March, and she said that, you know, a month prior to that, she's listening to a podcast about this coronavirus that's, you know, spreading across, you know, Wuhan, China, and she's like, oh, that's scary, but you never think. No one could have really anticipated how it would actually play out here in the United States, but kind of started feeling under the weather. And she said that she would equate it to when you wake up and you think that you can push your way through, go to work. Obviously, she had nowhere to be because MLS had postponed the season and everyone was working from home. But she said it felt like, you know, that kind of illness where you could kind of push through and work, but she was really tired. She was taking Dayquil and NyQuil, and then her symptoms started getting worse, and the worst part of it was the severe aches in her back and her legs. And so she said that that was kind of when she started to realize, like, this isn't just a flu or some kind of illness. It's probably the coronavirus. Had been quarantining, just living under the assumption that she did have it, and then finally was able to get tested and has recovered, you know, 100% since. But really scary stuff. And she said that the one thing to her that was craziest was that the doctor said that without any doubt, the partner that she lives with, family members that she had seen, had without a doubt had the coronavirus as well if they were in contact, but none of them had exhibited symptoms. So it just shows just how, you know, kind of dangerous this virus is because of, you know, the way that it develops in some people, whether that's, you know, asymptomatic individuals or people who do exhibit symptoms. So again, she's recovered fully, has donated plasma, and I'm sure saving lives by doing that. So if you found yourself with the coronavirus, and you're able to, definitely go do that, because it's really important in helping others who are maybe having a harder time fighting it off fully recover.
All right, so let's get into some news and notes for the broadcast today. So on the Sporting Kansas City show coming up, you're going to hear from Tim Melia. He's going to join us in the next segment, goalkeeper for Sporting Kansas City. He's also one of the union representatives for the MLSPA, and that means he's at the heart of the conversations that the league and players are having right now to try to negotiate some sort of return to play. So we're going to get his thoughts on that. But also, one of the big reasons we're having Tim on is because coming up on Saturday night at 7 o'clock and then again at 9 o'clock, Fox Sports Kansas City is going to air the 2015 U.S. Open Cup Final, the win against Philadelphia Union that you'll recall. Carter Augustine and I got to do the radio play-by-play my first year as a part of the full-time part of the broadcast crew that year. And that might have been one of the first times that Carter and I actually did a game together as play-by-play guy and analyst, which we're going to get into in a second. So tune in for that. Tim Melia coming up on the show in a little bit. And Carter and I might spin a couple yarns about our exploits in Philadelphia that week as well, because it was a really fun, great, happy memory for me. And I think Carter as well. But a couple things I want to get to, guys, before we do that. First of all, we had soccer this weekend. Bundesliga. Allie and I did a little preview show with Connell McCourt and Benny Failhaber on Friday. I don't know if anybody watched it, but we had fun just because it was awesome to have games to talk about. I've actually been pretty amazed, guys, by how well we've all in the world of sports been able to talk sports for 3 months almost now without actual any live games to break down. But man, did it feel good to preview some games, watch some games, discuss some games. And I don't know about you guys, I thought it was weird watching the games with no fans there. It was weird seeing a game in Dortmund without 80,000 fans going crazy. But it was also beautiful at the same time. I missed it so much. Carter, what did you get to watch much of the Bundesliga over the weekend? What did you think?
Yeah, I guess despite not getting the invite for the preview show, I guess I must have got lost in the mail. I did watch. I watched the games on Saturday anyways. I didn't tune in on Sunday or Monday. But it was great to get back to watching some soccer. But it was a little eerie without the fans, and that will be an interesting way they're an interesting thing to see how other leagues deal with that. I mean, we don't have to talk about how FC Seoul dealt with that in Korea with the dolls that they put in the stands. I don't know if you guys saw that story, but it was
I did, yes.
Particular type of inflatable doll that was used in the stands. I laughed at Jimmy Conrad posted a recap of one of the goals that happened where a defensive midfielder pretty much dribbled from halfway without any tackles being put on him and just straight down the middle of the pitch and scored an equalizer late on. There's some guys that look tired out there. That's for sure. But it was awesome to see some live soccer.
You know, it was good to see my boys with Mönchengladbach having a successful first run in match day 26, the first weekend back. But the no fans thing was weird. I mean, Nate, I believe you tweeted that it sounded like a tennis match or somebody.
That was what my wife said. Yeah.
Yeah. Kelly said it.
And I was watching tennis when she was in the other room.
That was the best description that I heard for that, because it really did. It was just a lot of echoing, a lot of, you know, random people. You could just tell muffled instructions being yelled, not really sure what they were saying exactly. But it felt good to live tweet an event. I don't know what this says about me as a person, but like, man, I love live tweeting during a game. And it was just nice to have something to talk about, Nate, like you said, where you didn't know the outcome or what was going to happen. I'm interested to see though, Carter, you mentioned the players starting to look tired at certain points. That was definitely evident, but the schedule for the Bundesliga is about to get a lot more congested as they begin squeezing in more games. And as we saw, Gio Reyna missed out on his first start for Dortmund in his first Bundesliga start because he got injured during warmups. And I think that, you know, that's something that's going to be a concern going forward with these players is how they're able to, one, manage playing all of these games while still staying healthy, but staying competitive as well. So there's a lot of questions that I know Major League Soccer fans like ourselves will be looking to have answered by the Bundesliga's return, but it was fun. It was fun. I enjoyed it.
And Carter, by the way, we're planning on doing another Bundesliga special coming up this week. So if you want in on it, you're going to have to show us what you're worth. Though we all pick teams. And look, I don't really even care how cliche this is, but I'm a Borussia Dortmund guy. My jersey has been ordered and it's on the way.
You're like 8 years late on that bandwagon, I think.
Well, that's not really true because that has always been my Bundesliga team. I just that was on the back burner. But and not because of the Americans that you would think of, because of my Polish-American heritage. At one point in time, when they were going to the Champions League final, they had Lewandowski, Błaszczykowski, and Piszczek. And I don't know if you can tell by those last names. Those guys were all Polish.
A lot of C's and Z's in there.
Not many vowels. Not many vowels.
C's and Z's next to each other where you're like, "What is? How do you say that?"
So I've always kind of had a special place in my heart for them. So, we went ahead and went for it. Who's your squad, Carter?
I don't have a squad. I've always liked the Bundesliga. I'm a little sad you're testing my bona fides when I had an Edin Dzeko Wolfsburg jersey on here and a Diego Werder Bremen jersey on here just a couple weeks ago. I've got a Schalke jersey in the back as well. You know, I've been into it, but I was more of a Bundesliga fan when Bayern wasn't winning it 7 years in a row. So yeah. I'm hoping that some team comes out and actually can topple them in this weird Bundesliga season, but I wouldn't bet any money on it.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Dortmund looked really good in their derby against Schalke, which leads me to a point, though. One of the biggest reasons I want to watch this is because of the young Americans. I mean, I like the Bundesliga, but I want to see Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, Gio Reyna, Josh Sargent. It was a bad weekend for the Yanks. Reyna, we got so excited because he was going to be in the starting 11. He gets injured in training. I thought Weston McKennie had a pretty rough game. I don't know how much of that was just because they were completely outclassed as a group by Dortmund, but I didn't think he played great.
Yeah.
Tyler Adams played, I think he played right back. If I remember, I didn't have my eyes closely on that game because I was watching the Dortmund game. And Josh Sargent came off the bench and his team got smoked. So it wasn't I'm hoping that things get a little bit better for our young guys here in the weeks to come.
Yeah, I agree. And I thought it was interesting. Weston McKennie went on with Taylor Twellman on his show Banter and just talked about the struggle from the player's side, trying to self-motivate when there's no fans or there's, you know, really just this kind of doesn't even feel like a real game environment around you. And I just thought it was interesting the mental challenges that a lot of players are facing. And it's going to be very similar for when Major League Soccer returns. So, you know, again, just looking at what the Bundesliga is doing right now and through the lens of how that will look then when Major League Soccer resumes is really interesting. But I thought that, you know, hearing him say that kind of made sense with the way that Schalke performed in that game. So, yikes.
I mean, you're right. All eyes are on the Bundesliga from other leagues and all other sports across the world. So, I think that's a really interesting thing that the Bundesliga's got a lot of pressure on them from that perspective. And I've been enjoying the guys popping up in the media as well. You can tell that they're, I think, really concentrated on trying to use this window to not only expand their own popularity, but the popularity of the Bundesliga. My favorite, I've got two things. One, I don't want to plug the Benny, Sal, and Ike podcast again, because I feel like we do that all the time. But I think they've got Tyler Adams coming on this week, I saw. Yep. So I'm looking forward to that one. And then the other is Schalke gave Kevin Garnett a McKennie jersey, and he gave a little shout out, except he called him Winston McKennie. And I, for some reason, that made me laugh an unreasonable amount. Like, shout out to my dog, Winston McKennie. And I thought it was a the funniest thing in the world.
Is Winston there a famous McKinney, Winston McKinney out there?
It sounds like a dog is. Breed to me. Like, this is my Winston McKinney, and it, like, sits like this. It's, like, paws are crossed.
100%.
It's definitely a foo-foo dog, that's for sure.
It competes in those competitions.
Yeah, it's a little dog.
Have you guys noticed that they've been airing a lot of dog show competitions? Like, for whatever reason, Tom and I have seen a few of them pop up on TV, and we don't change the channel.
Well, interesting. To that end, rest in peace, Fred Willard, because
yes.
The man who was maybe played the greatest sports commentator in movie history. Right up there with Bob Uecker from Major League.
Fantastic.
So best in show if you haven't had a chance to watch that. All right, guys, the league, the Bundesliga got underway. And one of the things that, and maybe this is nerd talk for us, I don't know if our audience is, if you're listening to this podcast and you have some feedback, Nate_Bucati, I'll have these guys give their Twitter handles as well. I'm genuinely curious, as a play-by-play announcer, about the way to call these games. I saw some conversation about that on social media during the course of the games. The biggest takeaway, and I texted some of my friends about it too, the biggest takeaway I heard from most of them was they actually want more play-by-play commentary without the crowd noise there. There's a lot of times, especially at Children's Mercy Park, I will intentionally lay out, as they call it, not say anything for a minute or two so that we can hear the great noise that's coming from the cauldron and the rest of the stadium. And then there's other times where you start to get into conversation about broader topics in soccer or a specific player or whatever, and you're not describing every little pass of the ball. Because I think usually that actually will turn the audience off if you give, especially on TV, if you describe every little pass in the course of a game. What did you guys think? Do you want to see more of that? What do you have any takeaways for how you would think a broadcast should go now that you've seen a couple of games like this?
I'm curious about the people who maybe want more of like a exact play-by-play, because you're right, Nate. There's this balance between see-say. You don't want to say too much of what people are seeing. But I wonder if that's coming from maybe a lot of the audience, because we saw the numbers. The broadcast did really well, especially for looking in Kansas City. I know that they found themselves in a couple of top five rankings for some of the games. I wonder maybe if that's a lack of knowledge from a majority of the audience who don't watch a lot of soccer. Maybe they want a bit more of a breakdown of what's going on the field because they're trying to understand a bit better how the game itself works. I didn't really have too many problems with the broadcast. I think just like many other people, it was unnatural at times, or it felt, because there was the background noise of the what sounded like a tennis match. So it was just kind of getting over that initial discomfort. But I personally didn't have any problems with it. I don't know about you, Carter.
I'm the same as what Nate was saying. And I've just been a fan of commentary for forever. So, I mean, I'm a little biased here. It's obviously what I got into. And I like to hear the commentary itself. I mean, we've been watching all these throwback games with people bringing on, like Sporting has been doing with Nate, bringing on ex-players or bringing on current players to describe a game that happened in the past. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of fun. I really enjoy the stories and the banter that happened during those type of broadcasts. Now, those are games that happened in the past. When these games are actual Bundesliga games that are live and have an impact on what's happening this season in the Bundesliga, I like hearing the commentary. I want to hear the anecdotes and stories about the players that are on the ball. And I think that's a great point, Allie. There might be a lot of new fans, a lot of new eyeballs onto the game, and maybe – I'm wondering the same as Nate, maybe all the banter and funny stories and stuff isn't as interesting to them because they don't have the points of reference. They don't have that in the back of their minds. I'm really curious, like Nate, I want to see what fans actually want to hear, because I'm so biased in this. For me, it's about the play-by-play and the color commentary. Like normal, it might be awkward without the fans in the back, but I want it more normal and giving color to the game and describing the stuff that's happening.
Again, Nate_Bucati, if you want to hit me with any feedback you have on what you like or don't like. Carter, what's your Twitter handle?
Carter Augustine, but the I is a one.
Augustine, I is a one. That's a very Twitch type of handle right there. I've noticed
I think it's what it's called, and it's really terrible.
It's what's it called?
LEET is when you, L33T is when you use numbers instead of letters in internet typing.
I just learned something. You actually just heard my landline phone go off, by the way. So that's how far in the dark ages my household is. But my son is starting to teach me how to say words that are not really words, that involve numbers and all, you know, sorts of other things.
Honestly, dude, LEET is from when I was in high school / early college. So that was 10, 15 years ago. That might be done.
Wow.
That might be gone already. I have no idea.
You just found a way to manage to make me feel even older, Carter. Thanks a lot for that. 10-year-old words are still new to me.
Have you heard about things called DVDs?
Tell me more.
So if you have a Blu-ray DVD, that to me was like the biggest flop of the century. Like, what was Blu-ray?
Yeah, that was right in that window where people
had HD to DVDs. So, yeah. You know,
like, it was like, well, everything was going to be digital. There was like a 3-week period where we could get HD on a cassette, you know. What about you, Allie? Where can people reach you on social?
I'm easy. Just at Allie Trost, AlyTrost. I was a tech savvy little middle schooler. So when Twitter first came out in like 08, 09, I was boom. First one on it. I would tweet out like the stupidest stuff, like Kelsey's coming over. Not really sure. Twitter game's evolved, but.
Have you scrubbed those old tweets in case somebody goes back to try to dig up the worst things you've ever done in your life?
I didn't really have anything like too bad. There were more just like, okay, Carter, let's get the internet sleuthing. It was more just like stuff that I would be kind of embarrassed about. Like there wasn't a ton that I was like, whoa, Allie, yikes on the language, but. No, I think I deleted a couple, but it was more just of like saving my future self of like 20-year embarrassment or whatever the time span would be that I would be important enough for someone to go dig at my tweets.
I've learned you've got to scrub your tweets every 3 years because what people think is bad today in 5 years, they'll think is 10 times worse. So, you know,
you're not wrong. Yeah. Yep. Maybe I should do like an every 5-year check and just
something like that. Yeah. Just get rid of that old stuff.
Hey, I'm just hoping that like what I don't get drafted and like the first overall pick in some sport or something that people, you know, want to go find dirt on me. I feel like that's
What I'm saying is when this Bundesliga podcast that Carter's not allowed in on blows up, you know, people are going to come after you.
That's true.
So you better watch out. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Tim Melia is going to join us. We're going to talk about that 2015 Open Cup that you can watch on Saturday at 7 o'clock and 9 o'clock on Fox Sports Kansas City. We'll talk about these latest negotiations between the players and the owners and how close we hopefully might be getting to some sort of return to play here in Major League Soccer. And we'll also talk about some of the news regarding the league as well. That's right after this on the Sporting Kansas City Show. And the Sporting Kansas City Show continues on your home for SKC Soccer Sports Radio, 810 WHB, and wherever you get your podcast, content, video, and audio. We thank you for tuning in, watching, and listening. And we're joined now by the man that Jacob Peterson says is the best American goalkeeper out there. I like to try to embarrass him right off the bat, you know, make him blush a little bit when he joins us on the show. And he looks like he's enjoying a beautiful day outside on the back deck. He's got an umbrella going, a little tiki torch behind him. What's up, Tim Melia? How are you, man?
I'm good. How's everybody doing?
We're doing great. And I didn't plan on even introducing you that way, but all of a sudden those words came to my mind. The very first broadcast we did this year, Jacob Peterson said that you were the best goalkeeper he's ever played with. And I put him on the spot because I said, well, you played with Brad Guzan too. And he makes a lot of money and plays for the national team. And he said, yeah, Tim's my guy. What does that make you think when one of your peers, one of your buddies says that about you as a goalkeeper?
It's incredibly flattering. I mean, just to hear that from anyone, I think is something I never thought I'd hear from anyone. So it's special to hear. It's even more special to hear from old teammates and guys that, you know, you fought battles with and competed with. And it's really good to see that players look at you in that light.
I was going to say, I asked Jacob for his five-a-side team of players he played with, and obviously a 14-year career, and he listed you as a goalkeeper, and he listed like five goalies that he played with that I think were in the running or we're goalkeepers of the year. So yeah, it's pretty high praise. And while we're on Jacob Peterson, do you have any good stories for us about our broadcast partner?
The story that comes to mind the quickest is the 2015 Open Cup final. The story where he was slighted his penalty shoot opportunity, but for a guy to just to give you guys a little background of the story, I know Jake spoke about it on a broadcast the other day, but the initial five had already taken penalties, and at that point you're starting to get other shooters involved, and guys are communicating within their little group of who's going to shoot next, and Jake kind of stepped up, being that veteran guy, and you know, wanting to make the people around him be comfortable because he's a team guy first, and making sure that the team was comfortable with him taking it. He said, "I would take it." And then in a opportunity where maybe there was a little bit more glory, he kind of got stepped over by Jordy, and Jordy went down there, took it, scored. It was all, everyone's happy. We all want to win, but just for that to happen to Jake, and you know, you can wind him up so easily about it because to get that taken away from you. But then ultimately Jake, just being the guy that he is, was just happy that we won. Doesn't need the attention himself, but it's something we always remind him of and something we always poke fun at him with.
Okay, Tim, I've got another story for you because I talked with Benny Failhaber on my show last weekend, and I asked him, who's the worst player to room with that you've ever played with? And he goes, easy, Tim Melia. He sleepwalks. Can you tell us a little bit more about this?
So apparently, I don't know if I believe it, but I think there's enough guys, so I have to believe it. Apparently, I will get up and I will think that either I'm holding my kid or my kid's in the bed. I'll just do some really weird things at night. I think Adrian had one of the best stories. My daughter was probably only a few months old, you know, that early stages of not getting a lot of sleep. It was one of our first road games. Middle of the night, I'm sitting there like patting on his bed. I don't remember any of this, by the way. He's telling me I'm patting on his bed, and I'm like bed sleepwalking, and I'm like, don't fall, don't fall, don't fall. And eventually he woke me up, like wrapping my hands around his blankets, and I like it was like his blankets in my hand, and I was like, oh, I'm sleepwalking, and I went back in my bed and went to sleep. But I do it every often. It seems to happen whenever I'm like on a road trip, whenever that first night I'm in an unfamiliar area, I seem to just do some quirky things at night.
So we're visiting with Tim Melia. And by the way, the reason we're having Tim on right now on the show is he mentioned a broadcast. Now we recorded that broadcast earlier this week, but it's going to air for you guys to watch. We've been doing these player commentary shows over the weekends, and they've been really well received by the fans on Fox Sports Kansas City Saturday at 7 o'clock. And then again at 9 o'clock, if you miss it, at 7, we're going to play back the 2015 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup final between Sporting Kansas City and the Philadelphia Union. So make sure you watch that. The player commentary will be with Jacob Peterson and Tim Melia. So you're going to get to hear Jacob tell. I make him basically tell the whole story in great detail of what happened on that last penalty, and he will get wound up. So it's worth watching, and it's a lot of fun. It was a tremendous day for Tim Melia too, by the way. He, at the time, set a career-high 7 saves in that game, and, of course, a couple of huge penalty saves as well on his way to making the legend of Tim Melia, the penalty stopper. But let's stick with the roommate thing for a little bit, because I've got to imagine that, I mean, you're usually a pretty quiet guy. You're not a talkative person necessarily, like, say, a Benny Failhaber. So is the feeling mutual? Like, was Benny the most annoying person that you ever had to room with?
No, I enjoy Benny. Benny's a guy that once you understand him, you love him. He's just always on, and I enjoy that aspect of him. So I had fun with him. I wouldn't rate him as my worst roommate. But then I don't think I would say I had a bad roommate, but then that probably means I'm the bad roommate. So I don't know if it's a good thing.
See, I wanted you to say yes so we could throw that in Benny's face at some time, you know, just to give him a hard time. But
well, at least it wasn't necessarily anything about you as a person. It was just this thing that you did when you slept. Which it made me wonder, because I know, like, there was a time when I was little that I would sleepwalk. And aren't you not supposed to wake that person up? So you kind of have to wait till, like, the episode is over so that you don't startle them and force them into some sort of, like, you know, physical reaction.
Yeah, you don't want to get in a fight with sleeping Tim Melia, I don't think. That's not the guy.
That would be terrifying. Yeah. Terrifying.
I think it's just happened to me so many times now. My wife wakes me up every time where I'm in such a state of nervousness, I guess is the right way to explain it, where I catch myself doing it, I'll laugh about it, and I won't remember anything before. And then I'll kind of come to and I'll immediately go back to sleep. And I'll just like in the morning, I'll be like, oh, I did something stupid, didn't I? And she'll be like, yep. But it's like 3 or 4 seconds. I don't ever wander out of the room or do anything like that. So it's not too bad, or maybe more seriously.
So Nate asked about your worst roommate. You wouldn't give us an answer. How about your best roommate? Who do you like rooming with or have liked rooming with?
I enjoy room goalkeepers. I don't know why. I think it's just, you know, we're kind of both on the same page. We're both on the same mentality leading up to the games. Zendejas to me was always just pure comedy. I can sit and listen to that guy talk all day long because the things that come out of his mouth are pure comedy. He's just like a lighthearted, always smiling type guy. He's just a good guy to be around.
So once again, we're visiting with Tim Melia, and I mentioned that you can see that 2015 U.S. Open Cup final against Philadelphia on Fox Sports Kansas City on Saturday. And so, Tim, one of the things that we had fun kind of going back and watching, you put into perspective, and it was that 2015 was the year that you kind of burst onto the scene as the everyday goalkeeper for Sporting Kansas City. So I guess I had kind of forgotten until we watched it back that you were still so relatively young in your time as the number one for Sporting Kansas City. So maybe for us right now to relive it a little bit, what do you remember about maybe the lead up to that game, what it was like for you mentally getting ready for your first chance to win a cup at the MLS/Open Cup level?
It was nerve-wracking to say the least. Also coming off a little bit of a muscle strain where I missed maybe, I don't remember exactly, maybe the game or maybe two games before that. And so it was a game that, you know, we had gotten into the Open Cup final. I was getting the opportunity to play games as a starter. And then, you know, I was carrying a little bit of a knock going into a really big game. So there's just a lot of things to make you feel anxiety, feel nervous. But all those are good feelings, I feel like. Those are feelings that, you know, keep you energized in the game, keep you focused, and that's why we do this. We love doing this. We love competing. We love having that feeling, and it's what brings you back to want to do it again and again.
Tim, I'm curious, just because I feel like goalkeeper is one of those positions that it's almost like its own cult, because not a lot of other positions or players on the field can really relate to what a goalkeeper does and how they prepare for a game. Do you have any little superstitions? I've played with a lot of people and have talked to a lot of athletes about things that they do before a game. And as a goalkeeper, I'd imagine your, you know, pregame prep is a little different than everyone else's. What are some things that you've done starting then, you know, in your career and that you've kind of kept with you?
So you're saying that goalies aren't soccer players, all right? You got that for me.
Yes.
No, I just think
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I feel the same way.
Stick with it, Allie.
I'm kidding. I used to be incredibly superstitious about cleaning. And I think it was more because we lived in these small apartments and I could clean the whole thing in an hour. And then now as we moved down to Overland Park, we have a home, we have kids, and it's like everything changes. All those superstitions you just don't have time for anymore. And for me, it's just more about being prepared. So it's like, with the competition that we're playing, do I understand the guys in certain positions? Have I gone back and watched? You know, I like to watch their most recent, if we're playing them at home, I want to watch their most recent away game, and then vice versa if we're playing away. So it's just, for me now, it's less about the superstition and more about being prepared, making sure I feel really good going into the game physically.
I just want to backtrack to that final real quick. Obviously a ton of Sporting fans there. The Rodrin was incredible in the corner there where you took the penalties. What do you remember after winning the game? Because Nate and I had a good night out that night. So I'm thinking that you guys probably had a good night out as well.
First of all, just the fact that we had that many fans trot to Philadelphia, it's not an easy trip. It just kind of shows the whole support of the club. It wasn't a packed stadium. I think we were talking about this a little bit last night. There wasn't like a overwhelming noise coming from the stadium, but you could hear the Sporting section, and that was uplifting, and that was a lot of motivation for the players to hear that. And you know, it was bad weather, it was a little chilly, and then to have all those fans come out and support us, it was awesome. But the nightlife post a championship was probably not as crazy as you think, because we had a game like 2 days later. So yeah, we went out for a little bit, we around, had a few drinks, but you know, we were kind of, I think everyone was just exhausted, you know, 120 minutes penalty kicks, and then to have to kind of push that out of your mind and get ready for the next game, because we were still trying to push our way up the ladder in the league. And then we went on to have an incredible performance in Portland, and Christian Namath score that ridiculous goal. So it wasn't as crazy as it normally would be, I would say.
Carter and I made up for you guys. You know, we did what we could to enjoy that. It is kind of one of the bummers about the Open Cup, though, is that you don't really get that big celebration because you're still in the middle of the season, especially if like you guys, a playoff contending team. I want to go back to the family life situation a couple times, though, because number one, you talk about cleaning the house. When you have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old or kids of any age, basically, someone told me this, and I think it's really true, that cleaning the house with kids in it is like brushing your teeth while eating Oreos. Like there's no, just you clean everything up and 5 seconds later, it's a complete disaster all over again. And guys, I want you to know one thing that Tim did tell us when we taped the show. This man ducked out on one of the worst experiences of parenting, in my opinion, by being at training camp this year. And that was, he got out of potty training his daughter. That is, I mean, well done. Tip of the cap to you, Tim, because you missed out on a week of washing multiple pairs of underwear, tears most likely by your wife at some point because she's convinced that the kid's never going to get it. And it's just, you did well by missing out on that. So congratulations to you on that front.
Yeah, that was a very obviously big hurdle I came away from. So I was happy to hear about that. And my wife handles that stuff. She's a lot calm. I'd be like freaking out, yelling, and she's just like, "Oh, it'll happen." But I think our daughter part was easier than maybe some other kids, so we were fortunate with that as well.
Tim, what has the parenting and quarantine life been like? We've talked to a lot of different players on Sporting about this. What's your experience been?
Oh man, it has been interesting, to say the least, because my wife's working and it's just been interesting. I mean, listen, I'm sure I'm going to look back on this situation and appreciate all the time I got to spend with my daughter, with my son, but they are exciting throughout the day, to say the least. They're emotional throughout the day. It's been a challenge, but again, I just hope I can look back and say this has been an awesome experience to be able to spend all this time that I'm maybe not going to get here. But there are days that they just absolutely floor you, and it's just nonstop.
So has it been a bit of a welcome respite to get back to training, or, you know, how are you viewing that aspect?
I didn't catch that. I'm sorry.
So has it been a welcome respite then to get back to training for a little bit there and maybe get out of the hair of the kids for a little while?
It has been. Getting back to any form of normalcy, especially on the soccer side, has been really good. Sporting's been really flexible with my schedule right now because of everything that's going on. So I'm going in pretty early, doing my workout, my individual workouts, and then getting back here before my wife starts her job, which she's doing from home. But just the first going out on the field and running with cleats on, you know, it was just, you just don't understand how much you miss it until it's kind of taken away from you. So, I mean, hopefully these are, you know, we're in early days, maybe a little bit of getting back to playing, but this is just, you know, a bridge we have to cross to get to a place we all hope we can get to with games and then with game fans. And we just got to kind of go through this because it's necessary for all of us to do this right now.
Once again, we're visiting with Tim Mielian, and you mentioned trying to get back to playing games. That's obviously what everybody's, yourself, us, we're all hoping that that can work out at some point. We also know that there's a lot of challenges, and it's not going to be easy to get back to whatever that is. we talked to Roger last week about it, and he was quick to point out, look, my life situation is different than other guys. I don't have any kids. I just need somebody to take care of my dog. And I can go to Orlando for a couple of months, and it really isn't that big of a deal. But obviously, we just laid out for you, you're in a different situation. You have a wife who has a job. You have two little kids who require constant supervision. It's not like they're older and they can take care of themselves for long stretches of the day. So I guess I'm just curious what goes through your mind when you hear all the different scenarios and the plans that are being looked at right now as it relates to your the world you've got there in your house?
Yeah, it's a difficult situation, right? It's one that they're not real problems, I would say. I mean, there's people going through a lot more difficult things than what we're going through. So it's hard to kind of, you got to remove yourself from that as well. But oh, and you're referring to us going to Orlando for an extended period of time. Because of all of those things you just said, I can't make a knee-jerk reaction. And I can't just say, oh, let's go and do this. I want to play games. There's nothing more than I want than to return to our stadium with fans in it. But that's not the reality right now. And because I have a family and because I have kids and a wife and, you know, other people that rely on me, I just need more information. That's the big thing we're all missing from this Orlando piece, is we just don't have the answers to a lot of questions before we can fully go, all right, let's do this. Because everybody wants to play and everyone is, you know, chomping at the bit to get back to games. And we're willing to make those sacrifices to, you know, benefit the league, benefit guys on our team, benefit our organization and all the people that work for our organization, because at the end of the day, we all do want the same thing. But we do just have to, or for me personally, I just need to just think about different scenarios and how they're going to play out and how they're going to affect my family.
Tim, you mentioned all of the questions, and you're right. I mean, not even just for soccer, but every league trying to return right now is facing tons of questions. For you, though, what's the biggest question you have in all of this with the potential return to play and all the obstacles?
First off, I think you got to think about safety. That's got to be priority one. The plan that I've at least heard from Orlando seems like that is a, if that's the bubble that we're creating, it doesn't sound like it's going to get more safe than what they're saying. And then the next thing is just the extended period of time away from the family. It's never easy being away from your family, and being away from your family for an extended period of time in a pandemic just adds extra stress to that. So those would be my two biggest concerns at the moment.
What would it be like for you playing without the fans?
It's going to be weird. I don't know how to explain it, because so much how you feel in a game, you know, that, I mean, I'm sure it's the same for field players. You know, you're able to run a little bit faster. Your mind works a little faster. You have a little bit more endurance. You know, as a goalkeeper, you're exploding quicker. Your decisions are going quicker. And that's all because of the environment that, you know, the fans create within a stadium. And when that's not there, it's going to be interesting. It's just going to be something different that you have to adjust to. But it's something we have to do, because it is a reality. And, you know, there's all aspect of, I think that if we can play games and get them asset on TV, you know, it's something of a release for everybody else and all those fans that follow this so dearly. So I hope we can just get it going in one way or the other, however we have to start, and we got to start that way, and then hopefully it just continues to evolve and move. Because I mean, just as people, as a club, as a league, you know, it's really hard to just stand still like what we're doing right now in an economy. You know, when you're not able to move forward, stuck in one place, it's an unsettling feeling. So I hope that we can just kind of continuing to push down these walls and do it in a safe way and get back to what we want.
You've talked about safety. One thing that stood out to me about the Bundesliga is a couple teams got a little bit of a slap on the wrist from the league after their celebrations, where all the guys came together and celebrated, and evidently they're not supposed to. But you look at the game, if there's a corner, guys are jostling like normal. I mean, there's tackles and coming together on the field. Are you worried about that part of the game at all?
I'm not, because if we're going to be tested, I mean, the plan that I saw has us being tested two times a week before or after. I'm saying everyone on the field and everyone within the, stadium, or whatever you want to call it, is technically not sick. So I don't see a problem with it, but I can see how people would see that as an issue.
Tim, to wrap things up, when you talked about the concept of playing in an empty stadium, the energy that you get, and we mentioned that moment where the Dortmund players went and saluted the yellow wall. I'm wondering if you've thought about it in these terms, because a few things have kind of occurred to me through the course of this pandemic. And one of those has been maybe understanding what you guys actually really do mean to a group of people. Because I don't know about you, a lot of times I dismiss the world we live in as, hey, it's the toy department. We do sports. It's not important. My wife is a healthcare professional. What she does actually is incredibly important to the health and safety of people. That's really important work. And what we do is just the fun stuff. But you actually, in a time like this, it would be so inspiring to a group of fans and everything to see you get to play again. And the fact that you talk about the celebration with the Rodron back in 2015 and what that meant to a group of people. And I know that it's not as important as other stuff, but morale for the city, morale for the community is something that's important when you go through really tough times. Have you thought about that at all? And has this changed your perspective at all about what it is you actually, as Tim Melia, mean to a community?
I don't think myself, but I do think that sporting and sports are ingrained in our community and within our culture, and they're really important parts of that. So like you said, I think if it is our job, and this is what I'm referring to, is if we have to make sacrifices to go to Orlando to provide that release to a larger group of people, those are sacrifices that we are willing to make as players, and we are willing to, help put other people not at ease, but give everybody just that little bit of release of having sports back in their life. Different sports with no fans, and obviously there's going to be things that look a lot different, but still sports. And hopefully that provides a group of people that love to follow individuals, teams, clubs, a little bit of the smiling that day, because right now it seems like there's not a lot of things to look forward to. And if we can bring sports back into the picture, I think that'd be good for everybody.
Well, look, we're all in the same boat there. We understand there are a lot of considerations. You laid them out really well. There's a lot of things that have to be worked out. There's a lot of things that we can't control. We have to see how they go, but we're all, I think, on the same boat that hopefully everybody can pull it off. I think it'd be great to see. And in a way that's safe and good for the families and players and everything like that as well. So we'll keep hoping that something happens here in the not too distant future. And we keep taking steps in that direction. Till then, Tim, we're going to go back and watch that game from 2015 when you won the U.S. Open Cup and had a couple of big penalty saves. Thanks a lot for the time, man. We really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, guys. I'll see you soon.
Okay. Bye, that Tim. Is Tim Melia. We'll take a break. We'll come back to wrap things up on this edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show right after this. And we're back to wrap things up on another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show. Nate Bucati along with Ali Trost and Carter Augustine. And we thank you for downloading the podcast or watching the video stream, or listening to it on Sports Radio 810 WHB. However you want to consume the content, we appreciate your support. And now, after having a good conversation with Tim Melia, guys, about a lot of the things that the players are considering, the owners are considering, thought I'd give the latest news that is out there. ESPN, Jeff Carlisle wrote earlier today, or yesterday, actually, the story came out. The MLS Players Association has sent a counterproposal to Major League Soccer regarding player salaries for the 2020 season, with the union confirming that the amount of economic relief would exceed $100 million. In a statement, MLSPA Executive Director Bob Foose said, quote, conversations between the MLSPA and the league about concessions have been challenging but constructive. Despite the fact that the CBA negotiations were just concluded and we anticipated a deal the next five seasons to share the sacrifice caused by the coronavirus crisis, MLS players have stepped up to offer a package that would bring over $100 million in economic relief to the league and its owners. So that's kind of the latest on where that stands. It's going to be a back and forth situation. And guys, I'm not going to sit here and take a stand on what the players should be demanding, what the owners should be demanding, what's fair, any of those things. That's above my pay grade. And I'm not going to sit here and say the owners should take this deal. But what I like is the fact that we're seeing a dialogue between the two sides. And the term that the MLSPA executive director uses, they're challenging but constructive. As long as that's the tone, then I will be optimistic that we can work something out. As long as both sides are trying to work toward a common goal here, they might have things that are challenging. I don't think there's any of us that would disagree with that concept. But if we have that type of constructive dialogue, then hopefully that means we can get to something that works out for everybody and we can get to back to having soccer. Allie, what's your reaction to the latest news we see there from Jeff Carlisle?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the fact that the conversations appear to be going amicably is probably the best news, because this is such an unusual thing that there's no blueprint, right? For teams or players or owners, anyone involved, there's no blueprint for how to approach this and what the solution is right now. It's just going to be a matter of, there's going to have to be sacrifice on both sides if we do want to see sports return. And I thought Mike Greenberg on ESPN said it best. Try to keep any money disputes out of the spotlight for right now, because it just kind of goes against what everyone is feeling is most important. And that's safety. And that's the health of not just the players and the league, but of our communities and of our entire world. So as long as the money thing could be figured out behind closed doors, and we've seen on the baseball side some kind of disputes that have gotten aired out to the media, I think figure that part out. It needs to be figured out. It's important to be figured out. But as long as health and safety is at the forefront and they're able to come to an agreement, that's all you could really ask for, because there's going to be someone losing out on both sides. It's just, let's try to minimize the damage for both owners and for players.
Yeah, I think Tim said something along those lines as well, which I thought was really great from him, that, you know, there are people dealing with a lot more difficult problems right now. So that's an important perspective to have. For me, I usually side with the players on these things, and I just hope that, you know, in our want to get back to the sports realm, that us as fans remember that these players are humans as well, and they have a lot going on outside of the game that a lot of them are well compensated for. I understand that part, but these guys are humans as well. So I just hope that, you know, so people don't lose track of that.
And we've gotten both perspectives or both sides on that on this show. I mean, Roger Espinoza talking about how easy it would be for him to pick up and go play in Orlando, not having any kids, just having to get Chulo taken care of. Whereas we kind of got to hear a little bit more from Tim about the struggles of parenting while in quarantine and all of the additional challenges that he and his family are having to deal with. So, you know, there's a lot to be considered, but it's great to hear all of the perspectives going into this. And that was great to hear from Tim.
And they want to play. I mean, yeah. I think that's the thing we need to remember, is that everybody wants to get soccer going. This is what they do for a living. This is what they love. It's a sport they love. It's a sport we love. So, you know, we have to see if they can work it out. And we also have to remember that some of the things that needs to be worked out might be beyond their control. And when I say there, I mean the players, the owners. We can't – this virus – is not subject to the will of human beings right now. And the way that a country or a state or a local government handles it is not subject to the whims of a sports league. We know that some of the governors have come out and said, hey, we're open for business again when it comes to sports, not in terms of filling stadiums, but in terms of team sports activities resuming. We saw the governor of California, Texas, and New York, maybe three of the biggest states when it comes to population, but also the challenges they've had with the coronavirus, have said they're welcoming team sports back. They left out soccer, a couple of them, by the way.
Frustrating.
Yeah, it is. But that also underscores the opportunity to me that stands in front of Major League Soccer, that, hey, there can be a little, hey, by the way, we're right here and we're playing now. So pay attention to us. And I'm not saying you throw away safety or you throw away all the other things they've got to concern yourselves with, but it is, to me, maybe an added incentive if you're Major League Soccer to say, we have a chance to gain more maybe than the other sports leagues do if we can get out on the field before they do, if we do it responsibly. But again, there are going to be some things that are out of everybody's control. So we'll have to see how that goes. And I will point out also, Hercules Gomez was on ESPN today. He said the talk of an MLS tournament in Orlando is premature at this point. There's a lot that has to be worked out. You can throw out these concepts and everything, but by no means are we at the point now where there is a hard, firm plan on exactly how this is going to go. These things are still a long ways down the road. Teams haven't even returned to team training yet. They pushed that date back, if you haven't heard, till June 1st. And we'll see, maybe once we start getting teams on the field in group settings, that's the next step to maybe feel like there's optimism to play again.
Yeah, and especially if they are kind of shooting for an end of summer time frame for when they would have a tournament style, if that is, again, how a lot of unknowns still with how it will materialize. But if anything disrupts that timeline and pushes anything back, well, Nate, you had brought up too the fact that the winter months, they're anticipating the virus to kind of spike back up again. So you have to be able to work around and have flexibility with things like temperature and the seasons, which are completely out of everyone's control. Time keeps moving. And if things aren't able to get back and going, then it just pushes it back even further. But I'm with you. This is a huge opportunity for Major League Soccer, more so than any other sport in our country, for making that leap in terms of popularity and having the eyeballs on them. I mean, look at the numbers that the Bundesliga recorded in the United States, and that's halfway across the world, a league that, yeah, they've got some American players, but for the most part, no team or individual that anyone follows super closely, at least for the casual soccer fans. So there's a lot to be gained, but again, it's just got to be a lot has to come together to make that gain happen.
Yeah, don't get me started on those governors, man. You look at any metric and soccer is much more popular than the NHL, but that's fine. I won't get started. One thing that I've seen that was interesting was Paul Tenorio he was kind of talking on Twitter after the Bundesliga and arguing that maybe closed door games with MLS on TV might not work in MLS favor, which is a different angle that I've seen. So that's, he's saying the quality on the pitch maybe isn't good enough in terms of compared to the Bundesliga for a new fan to get actually interested if they watch it, which I thought was a whole different angle. I think I'll disagree with it, but because the league has gotten so much better over the past few years. I think there's a lot worth watching there. But that was a different angle that I've heard just based off this past weekend's Bundesliga as well. So it's there's a lot up in the air still.
Yeah, I disagree with that. And maybe it's because I've watched the league I've been a fan of the league for long enough to see how much better the quality is here now than it was. But you look at the names of the players that have been brought into this league left and right, and especially this offseason. I feel like this past offseason, that's one of the real shames of this league getting shut down right now, is as much as the league had grown over the last 5 years, this offseason, everybody. I mean, Alan Pulido was this huge signing for Sporting Kansas City. Gotti Kinda, this is a tremendous player. And you look around the league, you're like, everybody's signing somebody like this. So maybe – I'm not going to sit here and act like it's at the level of the Bundesliga, but I think it's making a lot of progress, and I think it is a high-quality league. I think that the talent is fun and exciting to watch, by the way, as well, from an attacking standpoint. So I disagree with that, but we'll see. I mean, I
agree. Boy,
if you don't believe – I'm sorry. And I'm getting wound up. I haven't even read this article, but if you don't believe in your product –
No, I think Paul's as big an MLS fan as anyone out there. I think he's just looking at it from a fair and critical eye. And I think there are certainly some questions, but I agree with you. I think MLS is good enough that if we get on TV, this is a huge opportunity to get new fans.
Yeah, and my point is not from Paul Tenorio, but if you're MLS and you don't believe in your product enough to think we have something to sell and we have something to show off to people right now, then what the heck are you doing?
Yeah,
that's how I feel.
I'm also intrigued too, and I know that this was reported across ESPN and The Athletic with the round robin tournament style that they're proposing. I think that there's a level of competition that just naturally comes out of the way that these games are going to be played. that is going to make it really exciting to watch. And I don't know, again, exactly how it's going to be laid out or what the schedule is per se, but I think just reading that to me makes me think that we're going to get an equally high product, or, you know, equally high quality product, even if the games aren't being played as we've, you know, so been so used to seeing them.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is too, is that to me, the tournament style, there's a sense of immediacy to that where you feel like each game matters to a certain extent, where in the Bundesliga right now, they're playing out regular season games, and a lot of those games mm-hmm. matter. Don't get me wrong, but there's a difference we talked about all the time. Cup finals have a different feel to them. So we'll see. We'll see if they can work it out. Maybe not too much should be worried about at this point, because we don't even know how far down the road they are on pulling this off right now. To wrap things up, guys, let's go with our goals to Google. And Allie, we'll start with you this week.
Well, Mönchengladbach, the hardest name that I've ever had to say. For whatever reason, it still does not feel natural coming out of my mouth. But that's my team in the Bundesliga that I'm rooting for. And they
have you decided to spring for the $20 picture of yourself in the stands?
I'm doing it. I'm going to do it. I just need to I've got my jersey coming. I need to figure out how to submit a photo. What photo do I want that could potentially be on TV? That would be pretty cool. So I almost feel like I need to make it like an interesting photo, not like the best photo of myself, but like an interesting one that would get the eyes of a cameraman or whatever. So yes, I'm on top of that, but this was from a game that they played in 2012 against Mainz, and Juan Arango picks up a clearance off the ground that was intended to go out of bounds by the goalkeeper, and he just completely one times like rocket, and it doesn't go, you know, directly like beeline to the net. It kind of steeps up really high, like makes a nice arc, but lands perfectly in the net, and just kind of a crazy goal from far out that I really enjoyed watching. So I will post that, and I don't know if I butchered his name, the Venezuelan.
Oh, you're right on. Yeah. Boom. Okay. Juan Arango, what a name. That's a great bonus.
Great name. What a soccer name, too. But, yeah. I mean, it was just a phenomenal goal. Kind of a weird one at that. You know, you never know what you're going to get with a one-time strike on a moving target from distance. But this one happened to be a good one for him.
All right, Carter, what about you?
Okay, well, first of all, shout-out to Mönchengladbach and Michael Bradley, Fabian Johnson. A lot of American history there with that team. Mine is I'm going to cheat in honor of Tim Melia. A goal to Google is actually – I was thinking about doing a goalie goal, which would be cool. You know, Brad Friedel scored a cool one. That South African goalkeeper had the bike in the 90th minute. That's pretty wild. But I'm going with the goal that should have been scored. Andrei Shevchenko in the Champions League final in 2005 against Liverpool. He had two shots right on the goal line that to this day, I don't know how Jerzy Dudek saved it. So I'm gonna go with a goal that should have been scored to Google.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you went to a Polish goalkeeper, and on that front, my goal to Google is going to be a Polish striker. My guy, Big Lou, Robert Lewandowski, who is for my money the best pure number nine in the sport. If you get a chance to watch this Bundesliga stuff, Bayern Munich, he scored another one. It was on a penalty, but he scored another one this past weekend. Go back and look up the chip goal he had against Ingolstadt in 2017. You like the chip goals, right, Carter? This one, just a beautiful chip over the goalkeeper from a pretty tough angle as well. It's hard to pick which Lewandowski goal I want to go with, because I think he's on pace for 40 in the Bundesliga this year. Yeah. So that 3 years in a row with 40 goals in all competitions. So Big Lou. Just look up some Lewandowski goals and have yourself a time, because
I believe he's a goal away from having five straight 40 goal seasons, if I'm correct. So he is.
There you go.
Gnarly. I mean, like you said, tough to pick. He scored so many and so many good ones, but I'm going to count that as an affront against Tim Melia, because goalies hate getting chipped. So that I'm going to text him later.
I'd argue from a goal scoring standpoint, it is more difficult to get a good chipping scoring technique down than a traditional strike. There's so many different elements.
I don't remember Tim ever getting chipped. Do you? If it's happened,
sure he has. I feel like there's one where he came out and the guy kind of lobbed it over him. I can't remember what game that was. In his career, certainly he's had to have been chipped at least once.
Right, it happens, but I don't think it's happened very often to Timmy. He's so athletic.
Ingolstadt, that's the goal.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, a guy who sleepwalks is ready for anything.
Yeah, that's right.
Firsthand.
Yeah. he's swatting chips in his sleep, you know.
Yeah, he's like.
That's what keeps him sleep talking at night. All right, guys. Well, that's going to do it for the show this week. Our thanks to Tim Melia for joining us. Our thanks to you for watching and listening. We will see you again next week on the Sporting Kansas City Show.